The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights.
Whether that's live music at a historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association member, FDIC.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you? Welcome to Stuff Mom Never Told You from HowStuffWorks.com. Hey there, and welcome to the podcast. This is Kristen.
And this is Molly.
So, Molly, a few months ago, we did a podcast on a little term called the lipstick indicator.
Yes.
And in a nutshell, of course, you can learn more details in the podcast, but in a nutshell, lipstick indicator is this idea that in the downturn economy, the sign of people's shrinking budgets are a rise in certain goods. Mm-hmm. And so according to this lipstick indicator, they're saying that since women can't, you know, go out and buy ourselves pairs of $2,000 Manolos, we still can't afford certain small pick-me-ups, such as lipstick. So they're saying that when the economy goes bust, the sales of makeup and especially lipstick go up because we need something, a quick pick-me-up, you know, to make us feel like we're on top of the world when we have no money at all.
But I also think that to many women, lipstick is just an absolute must-have. You know, they may cut out their lattes, they may cut out the big shopping sprees, but so many women will not leave the house without lipstick on.
Yeah, my mom won't.
I mean, Chris and I are not good examples of this. I don't know if we're the most qualified people to talk about lipstick, but today we're going to try.
Because I hate lipstick. Never wear it. Or chapstick, but not lipstick.
I remember one time I got one of those kiddie makeup kits, which are pretty common. Like, I think young girls, one of their first, like, sort of transition into adulthood toys is, like, a makeup kit.
Was this when you were a child, Molly?
Yes.
Okay. I'll make that clear.
Yes, I just bought an intro to makeup kit. No, I remember I had a friend come over and she was very expert. She obviously had a very keen eye for watching her mother in the mirror. So she was applying makeup like this little adult. I took the lipstick and just drew a line down my head.
Yes.
And then kind of drew like things under my eyes. And was just sort of using lipstick as my my brush and my face as my canvas.
So you had no clue where lipstick went. That's awesome, Molly.
Well, I think I knew where I went. It just didn't please me aesthetically the way drawing it all over my face did.
You're a renegade, Molly.
I am a renegade because most women during history have known exactly how to do this, even when they didn't have the nice convenience of lipstick in a tube.
Mm-hmm.
Even when they had to make their own, they did it.
Yeah. A lot of the history of lipstick starts with Cleopatra. Obviously, you know, the most famous and last pharaoh of ancient Egypt.
And a famed beauty.
Famed beauty. And she wore lipstick made of crushed ants and carmine in a base of beeswax.
So, I mean, that's a commitment to wearing lipstick I'm just not willing to make.
Crushed ants?
I'm not going to crush my ants up. But women as far back as 3000 BC were mixing up ingredients that include things like seaweed, bromide mannite, which was halogen and alcohol sugar.
Ooh.
And was very toxic, with like red clay and iron oxide, aka rust. So they're mixing all these just ingredients found in nature together, especially the upper class women, as coloring for the lips.
But Molly, the person who was credited with creating the first lipstick that was actually a stick was a dude.
Really?
A Muslim Andalusian known, his name was Abu al-Qasim al-Zarawi. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. He created, yes, the first stick lipstick around AD 900, and he created a wax base for the pigment. He perfumed it and pressed it into a mold.
Wow.
Yeah. And lipstick remained pretty popular with women, throughout the Middle Ages. But then, its popularity began to wane when it became associated with, prostitutes.
And lower class women. You know, we've talked about a lot of fashion trends that the upper class has really pioneered. Lipstick's not one of them until we get, until the 1500s when we got Queen Elizabeth, who, as you may have seen, had a very pale face mm-hmm. and set it off with very dark lips.
And her lipstick was made from beeswax, and I like this, crushed dried flowers such as roses or geraniums. That sounds kind of nice.
It sounds really delightful.
Sounds like lipstick fit for a queen.
But, you know, every now and then you'll still get back to this sort of lower class prostitute thing to avoid. In fact, in the 1770s in England, basically there was a law that said that women who were wearing makeup were witches.
Yeah, witches, not just witches, Molly, but witches who attempted to lure men into marriage and could be burned at the stake for it.
How dare they lure men into marriage?
Yeah, put on that lipstick and watch out. then during Queen Victoria's reign between 1837 and 1801, women who wanted to color their lips would rub them against dyed crepe paper or ribbon, and some would sneak preparations purchased from France or elsewhere, because there was still this, yeah, the kind of a weird attitude about lipstick always being kind of associated with, I guess, sex, pretty much.
Yeah. But, you know, women are always willing to kind of bend the rules to get it.
Yeah. And then the tide began to turn in the late 1890s, and then Sears and Roebuck offered, rouge for lips and cheeks for the first time in their catalog. And then when we have the rise of, movies, the film stars would have to wear lipsticks because on the black and white, film, their lips wouldn't stand out unless they would wear the strong, lipstick. I'm sure that the male actors probably wore lipstick as well. Hee hee.
Oh, celebrities. Mm-hmm. But they were really the ones who cemented the modern push-up lipstick tube. It's commonplace by 1915. And after that, it really never goes out of style. And now it's sold bukus and bukus.
Mm-hmm. And, I didn't know this, Molly, but, Max Factor came along and invented lip gloss in the 30s. I didn't know about that. And during World War II, not surprisingly, a lot of lipstick ingredients like petroleum were unavailable. So you kind of see a drop in lipstick because it was scarce. But then by the 1950s, with stars like Marilyn Monroe and Elizabeth Taylor, these very like glamorous actresses wearing lipstick, it came back into vogue.
And, you know, red is always sort of the most popular color. And it wasn't until the 60s that we see trends in clothes and other types of makeup changing. And that's from the 60s on, you start to get the really, you know, crazy colors, frosted lipsticks in pale pink, lavender, and white, you know, very dark lipsticks. It just, you know, it keeps evolving, and now we've got a whole rainbow.
The rainbow, the lipstick rainbow was evolving.
And, of course, I don't want to leave men out. This fabulous article that we have about how lipstick works points out that there's a little term called manstick.
Mm-hmm.
For men who wear lipstick, they might be trying to go for some sort of androgynous rock glam vibe.
Channeling David Bowie a little bit.
Yeah.
Some of that.
But, you know, what exactly are we putting on our lips, Kristen? Or not putting on our lips in yours and mine cases.
What are we missing out on, Molly? Well, we're missing out on crushed beetles, cow brains, and petroleum.
And fish scales. So
fish scales.
I'm not too worried about it, but have no fear. These are not dangerous. Let's talk about what's in lipstick.
Yeah, let's talk about the ingredients of lipstick. Basically, lipstick, a tube of lipstick, is a compressed tube of waxes, oils, additives, and pigments that not only give you color, but also moisturize the lips. Because you don't want, you know, dry, cracked lips with color. We want them plump and moist.
So we need the wax because it's going to stabilize the stick and mold it into shape. And we need the oil. And this is where you might have cow brains come in, because a very inexpensive oil can be extracted from it. But after dangers from mad cow disease, they don't use certain cows anymore,
mm-hmm.
according to this article. But anyway, the oils and the fats in the lipstick keep it just the right texture, so it's soft enough to apply, but firm enough to keep it from melting unless you leave it in your car.
And then in addition to that, Molly, you've got emollients that make the lipstick even more moisturizing for your lips, and that might include stuff like vitamin E and aloe vera.
But, you know, people aren't really buying lipstick for the wax. I don't think they're buying it for the color. And so that comes from a combination of plant, animal, mineral, or synthetic ingredients.
Mm-hmm. Now, Molly, we mentioned crushed beetles earlier as one ingredient. Yes, delicious. Now, the beetles mentioned in that are the source of color, often listed as carmine or cochineal extract. And cochineal extract, Molly, refers to insects that are killed by steam, and then they're dried, powdered, and processed to create a bright crimson dye that's non-toxic and non-cancerous, unlike some red dyes used in the past, such as putting rust on your lips. That probably couldn't have been too good for you. And then you've also got preservatives like alcohol and other ingredients, and also sunscreen and fragrance.
Yeah, they can add all sorts of things to lipstick.
Yeah, and so they mix all this up.
Mm-hmm.
And they heat it up, and they make sure that the color is consistent, that you have a good smooth texture, and then it's pressed together into the tubes, and it's basically like making crayons.
Yeah, so they'll make sure everything's mixed, like you were saying, and then they put like hot oils in it, so it's mixed with the wax,
mm-hmm.
and then they pour it into the molds, and they just chill it till it's firm. I mean, it sounds, you know, pretty easy.
Pretty easy. In fact, Molly, it is so easy that we could be making our own lipstick right now.
That is true. This article, How Lipstick Works, has three recipes for how to make your own lipstick, which might be really important if you want, you know, an organic lipstick, mm-hmm. if you are opposed to using some sort of, you know, wax that's derived from an animal product.
Yeah.
It's apparently very easy. Should we share a recipe?
Let's share. I like the Very Berry lip gloss because it seems so simple. All it is just a cup of berries, such as cranberry, blueberry, raspberry, boysenberry. Then you have some aloe vera gel or petroleum oil, and you measure it out in a liquid dropper. And then 1 teaspoon at a time, you smash your berries into a paste. And watch out for berries with seeds because you'll want to get rid of those seeds. And then with a dropper, you add the gel or the oil until you have a glossy consistency. And then you're done.
And, you know, I don't know if I would make it to the final step. I have a feeling I'd eat the berries.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, women kind of inevitably consume a lot of lipstick.
Yeah.
When it's on your lips, it kind of gets eaten in small amounts. And there's this claim out there that women who use lipstick consume between 4 and 6 pounds of lipstick a year. A year.
A year.
I mean, imagine if you're dieting.
It's a lot of beetle shells.
Ruins your diet. But this article does point out that there's no scientific studies to prove this. And it seems a little ridiculous if you consider that the average lipstick weighs less than 1/2 ounce. And in order to consume 4 pounds, you'd have to eat at least 118 tubes of it. I mean, I don't know. I don't wear lipstick, but do you really even buy 118 tubes in a year?
I don't know, Molly. I mean, you'd have to be going through in order to use all of them up. You'd have to either just be gobbling them down when you put them on, because you'd have to eat like one a day.
I mean,
lipstick a day.
Maybe that's where the lipstick indicator gets so strong, because now we use it for food.
Maybe so, Molly. There you go. Yeah, maybe that's something we need to look into, lipstick food. But there are a bunch of different types of lipstick. You might think a lipstick is a lipstick, but indeed no, there are many varieties out there.
That's true. This may seem pretty basic to people who actually do wear makeup, unlike the two of us. But, you know,
it's a whole new world for me and Molly.
If I were ever to go to the store to, say, buy a lipstick, I would have no idea what to do, because you go to that aisle and there's a bazillion things.
Yeah. First thing, I would probably stay away from, me personally, for my style, I'd probably stay away from the matte. A matte lipstick is the strongest, darkest color of lipstick. And that's because instead of being shiny, they actually deflect light. And these are going to be your longer lasting lipsticks. And they might not be as flattering for thinner or wrinkled lips because they don't contain as many moisturizing ingredients. But if you want a punchy color, strong color, then
that's what to go for.
Matte might be the way to go.
But if you do have those thin lips, then one option you might consider is a lip plumper.
These are kind of odd to me.
They're designed to make your lips look fuller.
Yeah, but they do that by actually irritating your sensitive lip tissue, so that you're basically inflaming your lips to make them a little more Angelina Jolie-esque.
Yeah, you're basically using, ingredients might be like ginger, cinnamon, cayenne, or menthol. And so you kind of feel like a tingle. But some people have really bad reactions to them, and there's like burning and pain. So I don't know. I probably would just eat like a really spicy Mexican dish and have the natural effect than willingly buy something that's going to hurt my lips like that.
Or if you want a little bit of Carrie Fisher in Star Wars 5, you can get some hot lip gloss.
Yes. These have a little bit more oil than the regular mattes.
Mm-hmm. That makes them so shiny.
And sometimes sticky if they've got flavors. Mm-hmm. But they're usually transparent and the colors are lighter and they rub off easy, but you're getting a lot of moisture. Some people use both a matte and a gloss to get the best of both worlds.
Huh.
Deep color and shine.
Yeah. And then moving on, if you want something kind of in the middle of a matte and a gloss, you want something a little punchier than a gloss, but not quite as punchy as a matte, you could go for a cream. And these lipstick creams contain more wax. And so they actually protect the lips better than matte types of lipstick. But they also result in dry lips because of all that wax. So you might need a layer of moisturizer and then your cream and then.
Who knows? This is why we do not go to this aisle. But apologies if this is elementary to you. Did you know about shimmer?
Ooh, is this the frosty stuff? This is the frosty 70s style lipstick.
Yeah, and do you know how they make it so that it's all kind of sparkly?
Diamonds.
I wish. That would explain lipstick prices in some to some extent. But no, they're using mica, silica, synthetic pearl, and sometimes fish scales to get that light reflecting look.
Mm-hmm. And then finally, we have the long wearing lipstick. And these are the ones that you see advertised a lot, at least on the commercials that I see, like you want the long lasting lipstick that's not going to rub off every time you take a sip of your coffee. And these might contain silicone oil to seal in the color. But because these are long lasting, kind of sturdier formulas, they might dry your lips out. So you'd probably want to do a two part system of a base and a gloss. Once again, all these layers of stuff on your lips seems like a lot of work.
And, there's a section in this article, How Lipstick Works, that we're using for our source today that explains how to put on lipstick, the ideal way to do it, and all these tips. That section we decided is not really going to translate well into a podcast.
Yeah, so you can check that out on the article. But Molly,
even though I did want Kristen to like try to put it on so I could describe what she was doing, I thought that'd be like a really cool sort of radio thing. But
whenever I put on lipstick, in the rare occasions that I do, it just ends up all over my teeth and in places that it just somehow shouldn't be. Like, it'll be on my cheek somehow. I don't really know, like, how I'm so terrible at it. But Molly, I gotta say, I like your lipstick method. Just the old school, just line down the face and call it a day.
Just express yourself.
Express yourself with your lipstick style, whether you want a cream, shimmer, or gloss.
But why does this matter so much, women? Obviously, we, like I said, we've said many times, we're not really maybe the ideal people to talk about it, but you can't deny that this is like a huge thing for women.
Yeah, we've been wearing it since 3000 BC. It's kind of, obviously there's got to be some reason why women are wearing it. I mean, first of all, women think that it makes them look more attractive. There's a theory, that younger women have, redder, more supple lips. And so older women will want to wear lipstick to give them that youthful cherubic glow.
Whereas, teenagers who are just getting to start to wear makeup for the first time are wearing it to look older. They think it's sort of like this entrance into womanhood. So we've got these people both trying to look older and younger.
And younger at the same time. But then on the other hand, there's another theory that lipstick merely emphasizes our sexuality.
So maybe this is common knowledge. I was not aware of it. But the article points that if you amp up the color of your lips by putting, a rosy color on it, then you're basically trying to mimic your genitalia.
Yeah, the color of your genitalia. Yeah, I had never heard that theory either. But an interesting thing is I was talking to my friend about this article and this idea, of the, the color reflection emphasizing the sexuality. And she'd actually said that that was the reason why her mom discouraged her from wearing lipstick in the first place, because she thought it was just, you know, it was just kind of trashy. Mm-hmm. And I bet that that idea of kind of overemphasizing like the female sexuality is one of the reasons why it came in and out of vogue, and because it was associated with prostitutes.
Yeah. And there are some women who say that because you're only putting this on your mouth to make a guy think of your genitalia, that it's just a patriarchal trap. You know, you can go very extreme on this viewpoint and say, you know, just the fact that lipstick exists, it was invented by a man, mm-hmm. that we're putting it on just to
satisfy their gaze.
Yeah, to satisfy the male gaze. But then you've got people, this was really interesting to us, suffragettes wore it specifically because it wasn't, you know, a nice thing to do.
Yeah, that was in what, like the early 1900s, they would put it on, you know, as a way to stick it to the man.
Yeah, and also I think that we were reading about how in the 1980s it became sort of this armor. You know, these women were trying to make their way in the business world, sometimes for the first time. And you would think that rather than deflecting that male gaze and, you know, trying to fit in and be one of the guys, it was a way to emphasize their female appearance while still, you know, maybe becoming more aggressively female than they were used to.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of, lipstick definitely has an interesting and, you know, I don't know, contentious history, because we like it and we loathe it.
Well, we loathe it more than others. But, you know, there are some places where it's forbidden to wear it. So just the fact that we have the option to love it or loathe it is sort of a big deal.
Yeah.
Don't want to take that for
a chapstick girl myself. You know, I like to keep it simple.
You know, I just feel, I think because I'm not used to wearing it, when I put it on, I just feel like too flashy.
Yeah, me too, Molly. Whenever I feel go out with lipstick on, and like the two times it's happened in the past 5 years, I feel very obvious. I feel like I'm almost like attracting too much attention because my lips are so bright.
But of course, there are other women who just, you know, as I said, can't leave home without it. It's, you know, it's an essential.
Some women rock the lipstick, some women don't. But now we know what's inside of it and where it came from, and the fact that women as a whole have been wearing it for a really, really long time, which I think is pretty darn interesting.
It is.
And you know what else is neat, Molly? When we hear from our beloved listeners.
That is true. So today I would like to read an email from Jessica. You know, after we read some viewer mail, our listener mail about our online dating podcast, we asked for horror stories because we were getting a lot of really good success stories.
Really sweet stories. We want the bad stuff too.
So this is Jessica's, and a guy contacted her. He looked cute. His profile matched what she was looking for in a guy. They chatted online and over the phone for a couple weeks, and then they met up for coffee. Now, his profile said that he was 24 and 5'7". His photograph showed him with a gorgeous dark head of hair, friendly white smile.
Yes.
The guy who showed up, Kristen, was 5'3 or 5'4 at most, balding, had yellow teeth, and he looked like he was in his late 30s. Now, maybe she could have gotten over that, but he ended up spilling his coffee on her. And that ended up being a blessing in disguise because she used it as an excuse to leave.
Yeah, if you're gonna date, do the online dating, just be honest, you know, because if you do eventually want to meet up with someone, it's gonna be really awkward when, you know, you don't look like the photo taken 8 years ago of you.
That is true.
Yeah.
And somehow you got shorter.
Yeah.
Just don't lie.
Don't lie.
All right, let's do one more. This is feedback from our podcast on high heels, and this is from our listener, Vanessa, who is currently living in Korea. And she says that in Korea, women wear impossibly high heels all the time. Like, we're talking wearing stilettos on the beach and on the hiking trail. So apparently, because these Korean women wear high heels just all day long, they overdevelop their calf muscles. Now, this is something Vanessa says that she would not mind, but Korean women do immensely. And already plastic surgery is pretty big in Korea, so now they have this new surgery that Vanessa thinks is pretty crazy, calf reduction surgery. Women pay doctors a lot of money to remove muscle from their legs, and it's becoming really common, so everyone wants these skinny bird legs without giving up the ridiculous 4-inch heels.
Hmm.
Pretty insane. But here's something we haven't done in a few podcasts. Vanessa also sent us her reading list.
Awesome.
First up, we've got The Beach by Alex Garland, which she found far superior to the movie. Jude the Obscure by Thomas Hardy, Hocus Pocus by Kurt Vonnegut, The Satanic Verses by Salman Rushdie, and Great Expectations by Charles Dickens.
Awesome. Well, folks, we love to hear from you. Please write us. We want to know your thoughts. So send us an email at momstuff@howstuffworks.com if you got something to say to me and Molly. Hopefully it's nice. And as always, you can check out our blog, It's called How To Stuff, where we talk about how to do stuff. And if you want to read the article that we were referencing today, it's called How Lipstick Works by Shanna Freeman. And you can find it and a lot of other stuff on howstuffworks.com. For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Want more How Stuff Works? Check out our blogs on the howstuffworks.com homepage. Brought to you by the reinvented 2012 Camry. It's ready. Are you?
This episode is brought to you by PNC Bank, who believes some things in life should be boring, like banking.
Because boring is safe and responsible, level-headed and wise. All things you want your bank to be.
You don't want your bank to be cool or sexy. Sexy is for 80s hair bands, not banks. That's why PNC Bank strives to be boring with your money so you can be happily fulfilled with your life.
PNC Bank, brilliantly boring since 1865.
Brilliantly Boring Since 1865 is a service mark of the PNC Financial Services Group, Incorporated. PNC Bank, a National Association, member FDIC.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta
right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.